In the year 2000, the U.S. declared itself measles-free, thanks to a measles vaccine that had proven to be very effective at preventing the spread of the disease. Measles went from infecting 3 to 4 million people per year to infecting less than 100 in 2005. But the disease won't fully go away. The numbers of the infected have begun to rise. We are currently experiencing outbreaks of various levels in more than 25 states, some of which have declared a state of emergency. In this episode of Lessons from the Screen, we're going to be getting into what the measles is, what it can do to you, why isn't it going away, and vaccinations in general. Lessons from the Screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to. Welcome back to another episode of Lessons from the Screen, the show where we give you a review of whether or not any particular information that you can get from any particular screen of any particular kind is worth your time. Bada, 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 bada. We waste our time, our energy, and our brain power so that you don't have to. You're welcome. As always, every show, Lessons from the Screen, is sponsored by PAX Inc. Breathed in a meatball. Excuse me. PAX Inc. is a black, a black activist and advocacy and think tank organization. Purpose of increasing the quality of life for Black America, Black people in America through education, culture shift, and economics. You can check them out at www.pactsinc.org. That's pactsinc.org. Go ahead, leave them a comment, leave a review. You know what it is. Do what it do. Get involved. Do what you can to help them because they are doing what they can to help you. On today's show, we're going to be talking about the vaccinations going on, going down. It's going down. Because the measles is not going down and people is getting sick. So we got to talk about this. So that's what we're going to do. So when was the last time you heard of someone being infected with the measles? Right? For those of us that came of age after the 60s, probably never. Outside of the mandatory vaccinations, most of us have never even heard of the word. Well, for me personally, it was never, all the way up until the summer of last year, where there was a watch going on for a potential outbreak in Portland, Oregon. There was one confirmed case with 500 people suspected of exposed to it. Now, I had no idea until then that there had been small flares of the disease in 2014, 2015, 2017, and an ongoing flare that started in 2018. As well as a separate flare that started recently in 2019. In 2014, an Amish missionary returned from the Philippines with the disease, bringing it back to his Ohio community and infecting over 380 people. Because the Amish traditionally don't get vaccinations because of their reluctance to accept modern technology and to include medicines, they were extremely vulnerable, with 90% of those infected being unvaccinated. In 2015, an outbreak occurred that was believed to have been centered around Disneyland in California. 159 people were infected. In 2017, there was a measles sighting in Maine, which was the first one in 20 years. And in 2018, and continuing on through 2019, there was an outbreak in a Jewish community in New York of 200 people that were infected. It is believed that an unvaccinated person brought the disease back with them from another country and spread it through their community, which was possible because, like the Amish, they aren't really requiring people get vaccinations. In some senses, they don't want vaccinations. There is currently a lawsuit underway in New York because the mayor declared a state of emergency and put a policy in place that made vaccinations mandatory. And the Jewish community in question is saying that this is a violation of their rights to mandate that they get vaccinations. They have the right to decide what they want to put in their bodies and in what quantity. And also, earlier this year in 2019, Washington State reported 58 cases. And the governor declared a state of emergency and also made moves to make vaccinations mandatory. So as we can see, even though the disease was supposed to be eliminated from the U.S., it still keeps showing up. There was a spike in 2014, but it looks like we might be on track to spike even higher this year. But before we get into the why it keeps going up, why it keeps showing up, let's dig into what the measles is and why only 50 people having the disease is enough to declare a state of emergency. So the measles is a virus with a contagious rating of over 90%. That means 90% of unvaccinated people that come into contact with the virus will catch the disease. That means out of 100 people that come in contact with the virus, 90 of them are going to walk away with something that they didn't walk into. So there it is. 9 out of 10 people, 90 out of 100, 90,000 out of 100,000. You do the math however you want to slice it. If you come into contact with somebody with the measles and you are not vaccinated, you're going to get the measles unless you're extremely lucky. And if you're that lucky, you might want to go play the casino or go play lottery or try to capitalize off your luck. Because being lucky enough not to catch the measles seems like a horrible life if you're still broken and in poverty. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But even with the vaccination, there is still a chance that you'll still contract the virus. I mean, the vaccination reduces the likelihood so that there is less than a 5% chance that you'll contract the virus, but you'll still contract it. You still could contract it. But I got to say, 5% is a lot better than 90%. So, you know, you do the math on that. The other thing to consider here is once you have the virus, it is a virus. So you gotta let it run its course. You can't do anything. You can do things to ease the symptoms, but there's nothing you can do to speed up your recovery. Your body has to take the necessary steps to get acclimated to the invader, produce antibodies, and fight the virus off. That just has to happen once you get infected with it. Now, the measles virus causes respiratory issues. It's a respiratory infection that takes root in the respiratory system. This is part of what makes it so infectious, because once someone has it, they're literally breathing it out into the atmosphere for the rest of the world to breathe in. But it also is also present in all of the typical bodily fluids. And since it is a respiratory infection, there are usually a lot of bodily fluids to go around. The infection can last for weeks, and a person is contagious for up to 4 days before the full body rash appears and 4 days after it goes away. The symptoms can include coughing, which spreads the infection, snotting, which spreads the infection, fevering, which causes sweats, which spread the infection, and red eyes, which can also cause your eyes to water. And guess what? Those tears from your eyes watering contain the infection. Now, you have the coughing, the snotting, the fevering, and the red eyes, and that's first. And that's followed by red dots in the mouth with blue-white centers. And then the rash shows up, and the rash starts on the forehead, and it works its way down to the feet, covering the whole body. As I said earlier, it starts in the forehead, works its way down, covering the face, goes around to the back of the neck, starts on the back, comes to the chest, and it just literally... It's like there are bumps eating your body. You have a rash and it's covering your entire body. Now, the dangers of the measles are serious. Ear infections, which can ruin everyone's lives when the infected person is a baby, because, yeah, babies cry a lot when they get ear infections, and this thing causes one. But all joking aside, the ear infections in babies can be serious because they can lead to permanent hearing disabilities that, again, they're permanent, so the child is affected for the rest of their lives. Then there's croup, which is a swelling of the airways, which presents challenges that, while usually minor, are worth mentioning and can be extremely unlucky in certain situations where the airways might swell a bit too much, and you can imagine what happens from there. Then there's diarrhea, which we all know about, and here in America, having a loose booty is kind of a joke. You know, we kind of like, ha, 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 you got a loose booty. You got the runny guts. You peeing out of your booty hole. You know, all that's funny. We make jokes about it. But it's important to remember that diarrhea is no laughing matter. It's not. Diarrhea is responsible for 20% of all the deaths to children around the globe and roughly 5% of all deaths, period, around the world. This is because diarrhea essentially dries you out and you die from dehydration. So, all of your fluids is running out of your booty hole. You ain't got no fluids left in your body. You die. You prune up, turn into a raisin, go from a grape to a raisin. Then there's pneumonia, which is an infection of the lungs, which causes the air sacs in the lungs to fill with fluid, namely pus. This interferes with the lungs' ability to transfer oxygen and carbon dioxide and can result in death. And pneumonia really is no laughing matter, because even in America, people are still dying from pneumonia. Harriet Tubman, James Brown, and Bernie Mac all share the same ending to their personal stories. And all three of them are legends. That should be remembered. And finally, there is encephalitis, which is a swelling or inflammation of the brain. Now, most of us are very familiar with encephalitis because of our familiarity with CTE and the way that it's taken stage with regards to brain injuries in contact sports, namely football. And with all these potential complications that can be caused by the measles, combined with its extremely high contagion rating, it's no wonder why a single case is enough to cause worry. Now, prior to vaccinations coming on board in the 60s, all children got the measles, similar to how growing up in the 80s and 90s, all children got chickenpox. Well, all children except me, I never got the chickenpox, but I had asthma. So I still feel like I drew the short straw in that thing because, you know, all my friends got chickenpox, but they could breathe. I never got chickenpox, but I couldn't breathe. But, well, I guess it could have been worse because I could have ended up with chickenpox and asthma. And that could have been bad. But in any case, I'm old now, so I hope my asthma has gone away for the most part. And I hope that I don't get chickenpox because they say the older you are when you get it, the worse it is. So I could imagine it might take me out right now. But in any case, I didn't end up with chickenpox because I ain't no coward. I ain't no chicken. And in the first year of tracking the disease, going back to measles, back in 1912, more than 5,000 people died each year from it, with many, many more going on to live their lives with permanent disabilities. Luckily, those numbers were already dropping when the vaccine was created, wiping the disease out. Well, for the most part. The vaccine was finalized in 1963 and upgraded in 1968 to the version we now have that is usually delivered in a cocktail that includes vaccinations for mumps and rubella. And sometimes varicella, aka chickenpox. So we growing up, we got the MMR. Now they get the MMRV, which is why kids don't get the chickenpox anymore. Now, the way vaccines work is by giving the body an opportunity to familiarize itself with an invader in a safe way. This is done by introducing a dead or severely weakened version of the disease into the body. The body recognizes the invader and begins to build antibodies. And even though most of those antibodies break down, the immune system maintains a record of invaders so that if that same invader shows up again, it can jump into action and quickly destroy the invader before it has time to create trouble. So it's like the first time you go into, say, you know, you got a friend and he's reckless. The first time you take him to a restaurant, he's able to do a lot of foul and crazy stuff. Because the restaurant don't really know what to expect. But after he do that crazy stuff, now they take a picture of him. They remember what he did. Now the next time he try to get into the restaurant, they're like, nah, bro, can't come in. Save the restaurant from some trouble. Same way. So while it is true that your body will create antibodies even without a vaccine, the process is more dangerous. You see, when your body is introduced to a foreign invader, it can take your immune system several days to begin to produce antibodies. And if it's an extremely active virus or bacteria, a few days is enough time to kill you or do major damage. For certain invaders, it simply takes the body too long to recognize the invader and to develop a course of action to destroy it. Vaccines give the body an opportunity to familiarize itself with an invader without you having to worry about dying in the meantime. Sounds wonderful, right? I mean, that sounds pretty good, right? You know, I like to get a chance to get to know something that could potentially kill me in an environment where it can't potentially kill me, so that I can learn how to deal with it in an environment where it is actively trying to kill me. Seems like a good thing. But, of course, for every position that says that this is a good thing, there is another position that says, hold up, wait a minute, I ain't going that bullshit. So that's what we face. Resistance movements against vaccinations have been around since vaccinations were created. They're just as old as the vaccines they're fighting against. In the early 1800s in Europe, as the first ideas of smallpox inoculations were making their rounds, people resisted for a variety of reasons. It didn't make sense that shooting infected material into the body would protect it. The earliest concepts of a smallpox vaccine suggested shooting material from an infected cow with cowpox into a human. And that seemed unsanitary. I mean, you're going to take fluid from a diseased animal and inject it into my body. That seems, and I can't blame people for that. I would be looking at you crazy too if you hold up a syringe filled with freaking cow pus and say, let me shoot this in you to make you better. Are you crazy? No. But so I get, you know, I get that. And people also debated about the actual cause of smallpox, with some people saying it was caused by dead and decaying matter in the atmosphere. And as governments began to make vaccines mandatory, many people believed that it was a violation of their personal freedoms. And what do you know? 200 years later, in an entirely different continent, in an entirely different country, people still have the same issues with vaccines today as they did when they first came out. We still debate about what the cause of the disease are. We still debate about whether or not it's sanitary. We still debate about whether or not the vaccines work, are they effective. We still debate about whether it's a violation of our personal freedoms to be mandated to get vaccinations. We still debate all of these exact same issues, and we have been debating them no matter what the particular virus or disease in question is. In the early 1900s, the smallpox outbreaks began in America, with both pro-vaccination and anti-vax campaigns began almost immediately. This all came to a head in 1905 after a man took his court battles with the city of Cambridge, Massachusetts, to the Supreme Court. You see, the city had passed a policy mandating that vaccinations be given, and he refused, saying that he knew best how to take care of his body and it was his right to do so. The city took him to court, filing criminal charges against him. The city won, and the man appealed to the Supreme Court, who sided with the city, stating that the state could enact compulsory laws to protect the public in the event of a communicable disease. And if there is anything like a communicable disease, then we're talking about smallpox, we're talking about measles, we're talking about any disease that passes from one person to another. This went into something that is talked about often with regards to vaccinations, which is something called herd immunity. Now, there are going to be those in every group that can't get vaccinated for a number of reasons: immune systems issues, age-related issues, and immune system stuff and age stuff and immune system. Well, for the most part, I think those two are about it, but I could be wrong. But these people are protected by the fact that everyone else is immunized. So the chance of them coming into contact with said pathogen is reduced because the pathogen doesn't exist in the community in the first place. But this only works when everyone that can be immunized is immunized. And officials recognize that allowing people to decide not to immunize themselves put others at risk, particularly if they couldn't be immunized. Vaccinations was and still is seen as a decision that affects a lot more than just you. You deciding not to vaccinate yourself or your child has implications and repercussions that outstrip your personal life or your child's personal life. As we saw in some of the examples I gave earlier, where somebody went to another country, picked up a vaccine, brought it back to a community that was filled with unvaccinated people, and lo and behold, we have an outbreak. Now, the pattern continued, and it continues. And every time it seems like there is a new vaccine released, there is an organization standing there saying it's toxic, ineffective, and causing other problems, or it was part of some government plan to do various things that require needles going into bodies. And I'm not saying that condescendingly or anything like that. I love a good conspiracy just as much as the next person. So it is what it is on that. In the 1970s, for example, DTP, diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis was linked by some organizations to neurological disorders in children. This caused widespread panic similar to the way the MMR vaccine was linked to autism in the late 90s, early 2000s. And let me say, as a parent of somebody with autism that has done loads of research and read nearly everything I can get my hands on, the MMR vaccine does not cause autism. Let's just stop. Okay, let's just stop it. Now, I started out believing the myth because I wanted to blame someone or anyone. But the more I read, the more I realized that it simply wasn't the case. There just isn't very much credible data to back it up. There isn't any real credible data to back it up. And then I realized that if they had been giving out this vaccine since 1968, why would we only just now be seeing rises in the number of children diagnosed with autism more than 30 years later? And the journal that originally published the MMR autism paper has since said that it should not have published the paper, as the author had been paid by parents in a lawsuit to find a connection between vaccines and harm done to their children. He was barred from practicing medicine, and it came out later that he had falsified data looking for other avenues to profit. In any case, similar to what's happening now, people hesitant to get their children vaccinated with DTP allowed major epidemics of whooping cough to take effect on multiple occasions. Currently, there is still a problem of thimerosal, which is a preservative that contains amounts of mercury, which is a highly toxic substance. This compound is used in vaccines to preserve them. And although no evidence was found to link autism or attention disorders in children to these substances in vaccines, a connection was made by anti-vax groups who continue to push against vaccinations. And while this issue first came to light in 1999, by 2001, the U.S. had agreed to remove thimerosal from vaccines, and by 2005, all but regular flu shots have been restructured. But the story is actually a bit more murky than it appears with regards to mercury. That is a really lame joke, isn't it? All right. You see, there are two kinds of mercury that are usually in the discussion, and although they are very different, they are commonly lumped in together. One is called ethylmercury, and it is a fast-degrading form of mercury that can be removed from the body in a matter of days. This is the mercury found in vaccine preservatives. The other is called methylmercury, and it takes more than a month and a half to be removed from the body. This is the type of mercury found in fish. And this is also why people have been told to scale back on fish for decades. Now, I'm not fixing to tell you that one form of mercury is a neurotoxin and the other one isn't, because they both are neurotoxins. But the problem isn't with mercury, or the problem with mercury, shall I say, isn't caused by simply having mercury present in your system. It's caused by the accumulation of large quantities of it in your body, or of a certain quantity of it in your body. You see, the body always has toxins in it. Some of the toxins are produced by the body itself. A toxin is essentially anything that damages the body that cannot reproduce itself. And in the case of the neurotoxin that is mercury, it affects the nervous system. But there are other toxins like salt that we consume on a daily basis. Another example would be caffeine in coffee or drinks, are some of the other chemicals present and naturally occurring in vegetables. You see, we can't get away from toxins, so just because something is toxic doesn't mean it's going to kill you. What it means is that you should monitor your dosage, because if you get too much of it in you, it can cause problems. Chewing and eating hundreds of apple seeds in one sitting will not do you any favors because of the cyanide present in the seeds. And I don't have to tell you how deadly cyanide is. But eating a few apple cores might actually be good for you. Now, I'm not suggesting that mercury is good for you. I'm merely pointing out that just because something is toxic doesn't mean that it's going to kill you. And according to some studies, you get less mercury from a vaccination than you get from 2 pounds of fish meat. And again, the vaccination mercury degrades faster than the fish mercury. And thus, some could adequately argue that it's safety, that it's safer. But why even use mercury in vaccines? Well, most vaccines have never had the preservative compound in them. The MMR, DTP, and other single-dose vaccinations have never had mercury in them ever, which makes the assertion that mercury in an MMR is what causes autism dangerously ludicrous. The mercury preservative compound used in multi-dose vaccinations is only used in multi-dose vaccinations and is used to prevent harmful bacteria from growing in the vaccine when the vaccine container is pierced by the syringe, and that it makes the multi-dose vaccine safer. But again, it's only used in multi-dose vaccines. So while most of the science and professional studies studying vaccinations and vaccines say that they are safe and necessary, many people don't trust the medical establishment despite the fact that the diseases we are being vaccinated against are in fact disappearing, except in those small pockets where they aren't, because people aren't getting vaccinated and come into contact with someone from another country or in another country that has the disease. And that sort of medical distrust is understandable, especially when you consider the experimentation done on the Black community by the medical establishment at various levels, from the women and the reproductive studies done where they brutalize women, to the tuberculosis experiments, to the all of the other experiments that have been done on Black people. I'm not saying we should totally trust the medical establishment. The medical establishment has done absolutely nothing thus far to gain our trust. What I am saying, though, is that we should make sure that we adequately understand what's going on in a situation before we condemn the situation outright. So what are our takeaways from this? One, I think our takeaways is that knowledge is dangerous, especially if it's bad knowledge. And right now we have a growing anti-vax community in the Black community spitting out all kinds of easily disproven statements about vaccinations and about diseases and about propagation and about all these other things, easily disproven. We also have a bunch of people sharing information that has been discredited, and that's easy to verify or look into as well. We need to do more research, and we need to take our health more seriously. And this isn't just about vaccinations, although of course that's the center of this conversation. This is about health in general. We need to start taking it more seriously. If we continue along this path of rejecting things that are good for us because someone told us they were bad, it was bad for us, meanwhile accepting things that are bad for us because that same person told us it was good for us, and we're not doing any critical research or thought to formulate our own informed opinions, we are in for a really, really, really rough ride, a rougher ride than the one we're currently experiencing. We live in a world where people will encourage a parent to call the police on their child in order to teach that child a lesson, even though we know the relationship that the police department has with the Black community. But they will tell their parent not to vaccinate their child because a fear that the vaccine is going to give the child some sort of mental retardation. From my standpoint, it seems like it's more likely to have a negative encounter with the police than to have a negative reaction, a extreme negative reaction from a vaccination. And I stand by that because there are millions and millions and millions of opportunity for extremely negative reactions. And the reactions are largely null and void. There are some bad reactions. I'm not saying there aren't. But out of the hundreds of thousands of opportunities for bad reactions we have when dealing with the police on a daily basis as a community, a good chunk of those, I'd say as much as 10 to 15%, maybe even 20 to 25% of those are negative interactions. I know in my own life and in an unofficial survey of my friends, the vast majority of us, upwards of 70 to 75% of all our interactions with law enforcement have been negative. And that's even when we haven't done anything. Yeah, you know, that's not to say we only bump into law enforcement when we're speeding or we're otherwise breaking the law or overstepping some sort of policy or ordinance. No, this is just interactions with police departments, police officers, where they come into our spaces for various reasons. It's overwhelmingly negative for an overwhelmingly large percentage of the people I know. So, again, I use that as a comparison for how we need to do more research on the types of things that we believe in. And yes, we do need more studies done specifically on how Black people respond to certain vaccines, certain viruses, certain components. We do need that research as well. But what we don't need is people running off half-cocked, not understanding how vaccinations work, not understanding how viruses and bacteria work, not understanding how the immune system works, not understanding chemistry, not understanding basic genetic components of health and medicine and science. And I'm not saying I understand all that either, but what I am saying is that I am constantly researching, learning, and changing my position based on new information. And we need more of that. This measles thing is dangerous. And we're seeing far too many people in the community get caught up in this anti-vax movement with no real understanding of what it is they're really saying, what it is they're really protesting, and what it is they're really against. They saw a YouTube video of somebody making a bunch of correlative statements about how their child got autism after they received the MMR vaccine because the MMR vaccine has Thermosil in it, and Thermosil contains mercury. And they don't know that on every single level, you can break that statement down and prove how untrue and unfounded it is on every single level. And you can prove it. You can even prove the lack of credibility in their argument by pointing out the fact that the person that created the argument has been proven to falsify his documents, has been proven to be compromised in terms of conflicts of interest. So I'm not saying blindly trust the medical establishment, because as I said earlier, they have proven that they're not to be trusted. They're not a trustworthy organization when it comes, or a trustworthy institution when it comes to Black people in the community. And we need more Black people in the community getting involved in medicine so that we can build our own medical institutions that can make sure that the things that are being said and done to us are in our best interest and not in the assumed best interest of us because it worked in a control group that contained 80% white people and 10% Black people and 10% Hispanic people. So these are all things that need to be done. Of course, we know that there are things out there that are problematic. We know that there are vaccines out there that are problematic. The H1N1 vaccine, that first batch of vaccines that came out that was killing people in Japan, that was not a good vaccine. It was not a good vaccine. I don't know how many lives it saved, but I do know how many lives it took. So I'm not going to say that I think it was an absolutely horrendous vaccine, but I will say that it was not a good vaccine, in my opinion, from the data and the research that I've seen. I would not get it. I would not advise anybody else to get it. I will also say, there are a lot of things out there that people want to inject into you that I don't necessarily think should be injected into you. That's my personal opinion. What you need to do is do the research on these things before you form an opinion on them. Okay? Before you determine that this is good or bad for me and my child, you need to understand what it is. That's the lesson to be learned here. Because in this situation, there are communities of people who are not Black, who have decided not to vaccinate their children. And now the diseases that they are not vaccinated against are in their communities, wreaking havoc. So imagine, and here's the other thing before I go. if the United States hates black people as much as we believe they do, imagine how much easier you're making their job by not getting vaccinated. They can just release plagues into your community. We know they have a lot of these diseases on ice. Now, I understand on the other side, you can say, well, imagine how easy it would be if you're getting vaccinated for them to shoot you up with something. That's a valid point. It's a very, very, very valid point, which is why I say we need that medical institution of black people, for black people, by black people that care about black people. That is something that's non-negotiable. That is required. But in the meantime, I will trust that over the last 40 years, the black community has not slipped into a cesspool of autism and neurological decay. And over the last 40 years, we have been getting vaccinations. And over the last 40 years, the diseases that we have been vaccinated against have largely disappeared from the community. So I will take all of that context and say there is some validity to vaccinations. But you have to learn how to do your research. And with that, you tell me what you think. Tell me what you think is going on. I've heard a few interesting theories from friends about what's really happening right now concerning profit margins for pharmaceutical companies, concerning a whole host of things. I've heard actually three or four really good conspiracies. And I love a good conspiracy, as I said earlier. I've heard three or four really good conspiracies from friends that I think are believable. And I'm not saying they're totally credible and you should believe them, which is why I'm not going to share them here. But I think they're interesting and they're well worth the fun that's involved in researching them. But tell me what you think. Go to the website, www.freedomtrainradio.com. Go to the Lessons from the Screen area. Hit up the vaccination show, the measles show, and let me know what you think. I will see you next time on the next episode of Lessons from the Screen.
Lessons from the Screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
I want to thank you guys once again for tuning in to Lessons from the Screen. I also want to encourage you guys to head over to the website, www.freedomtrainnetwork.com. You can head over there to the website, gain access to all of the shows on the Freedom Train Network, including this one. You can access to old shows, new shows. You should also check out the Freedom Train app. You can find it in the Google Play Store. If you research Google Play or research Freedom Train Radio or Freedom Train Presents the Freedom Train Network, you'll find the app there and you'll see the Choo Choo Train. That is our trademark Choo Choo Train for the Freedom Train. You can get all of the shows right there on your cell phone. Notification whenever we drop anything, or maybe we just want to see a notification saying hi. So you should definitely go and get that app. And you should also take a listen to our live internet radio streams throughout the weekend. We're dropping lectures, we're dropping shows, we're dropping all kinds of interesting things on the weekends. So definitely take advantage of that. I want to thank you guys again for supporting us. And as always, we appreciate you. We'll see you next week. This is Freedom Train Network Presents Lessons from the Screen.